At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Go Wild is a free social community created for and by hunters. This means that unlike mainstream social media, your trophy pictures won't be censored. They're encouraged. As you spend time on Go Wild, you will earn awesome rewards such as gift cards, free swag, and big discounts on brands like Garmin and Vortex. You will even earn $10 just for signing up. Visit downloadgowild.com and sign up today.
Welcome to the How to Hunt Turkeys podcast. I'm Paul Campbell. Join me as we dive into the world of turkey hunting. Every episode, we'll explore the minds of the finest turkey hunters around. We'll take a look at the people, the places, the tactics, gear, and the culture that creates the mystique around America's favorite bird. That's right, I said it, America's favorite bird, the wild turkey. Throw on your turkey vest, grab your box call, and let's talk some turkey. The How to Hunt Turkeys podcast is brought to you by Go Wild. Visit timetogowild.com or download the app on iOS or Android. Go Wild has all the gear the wild turkey hunter needs. Camo clothes, hats, vests, turkey calls, decoys, and everything else. Sign up for a free account today and get $10 off your first order. timetogowild.com. Wicked North Gear, delivering the very best gear for a life well lived in the great outdoors. From field kits and DIY taxidermy solutions to hats, hoodies, stickers, and more, visit wickednorthgear.com. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the How to Hunt Turkeys podcast. I am your host, Paul Campbell. This weekend, Southern Florida. Today, I'm going to date this episode. Today is February 26th, 2023. The Utes were out in Southern Florida hunting Osceola turkeys, getting it done. It is here. Guys, it's here. Turkey season is here. I am so excited. Can't wait. I am 15 days for my first turkey hunt of the year. I can't sleep. It's not going to happen. I'm not going to sleep the rest of those 15 days. So got a great episode for you guys lined up today. I've got Team Wingbone, which is a group of guys from Louisiana. They have a really good YouTube channel. So if you're looking for content, these guys, I'm telling you, they're putting out some of the purest turkey hunting content that you can consume on YouTube right now. Check them out. Just search Team Wingbone on YouTube, on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, all of it. A really great group of guys. When you talk about family traditions, Oh, Hank Williams Jr. diving into this conversation here. Family traditions. These guys, their family tradition of turkey hunting dates back to 1933. That is amazing. That is absolutely amazing. Just a wonderful episode. This I've done over probably 200 podcast episodes since I've been doing this. This is top five. Really is. Just an unbelievable conversation. And if you've listened to all of these episodes right now, and if you're just new, you're just coming in, the best way to learn to turkey hunt is through storytelling. And I hope you've picked up on that. This is not one of those shows where it's like, oh, hey, we're going to do this. This is how you do this. This is how you do this. This is what you want to do here. You want to set up here. You'll get a little of that. The best way to learn, in my opinion, to turkey hunt is through storytelling. And that's what this is. That's what this show is all about. This is just a fantastic interview. So thanks to the guys from Team Wingbone. I can't thank you enough. Really enjoyed it. They sent me a hat. Love this thing. Great logo. Of course, it's in Mossy Oak Bottomland. Love that. So you guys are really going to enjoy this episode. There's a little feedback in the beginning. So, you know, listen, I'm not an expert. I'm not a producer. All right. I'm an idiot. I'm literally sitting in my basement at, you know, 9 o'clock on a Sunday night. I don't know how to edit podcasts as well as I should. I'm not freaking Steve Rinella, right? So give me a little grace. The editing might be a little weird in this one, but the content, the storytelling, the information, the knowledge you're going to get is second to none. You're really going to enjoy this episode. So dive into this. Thanks for listening. Hit subscribe. Tell your friends about it. Find this show on Instagram, H2HT, How to Hunt Turkeys, H2HT Podcast. Find me on Go Wild, How to Hunt Turkeys. If you haven't checked out Go Wild yet, if you're new to this show, you haven't listened to the O2 Podcast, the other show that I do with Andrew Muntz, Go Wild, you hear them in the intro, awesome community. They've got a really neat feature, the Near Me feature. Check it out. I want you to read the article on timetogowild.com that I talk about how to use that data, that information that we collect through that Near Me to make you a better turkey hunter. You're really going to like that. Check out the stuff that we've got at wickednorthgear.com. Kill kits, DIY taxidermy. You guys will be shooting some long beards this year. You got to have some kits. You got to have some stuff to hang those beards, to hang those fans. Bobby's got all those, wickednorthgear.com. You've heard me talk about it. This site, this is a labor of love for me. This is a new project that I've been working on with my buddy Justin, turkeyseason.com. I am so excited about this. Team Wingbone, those guys are on there. Some of the best turkey content that you can find on the internet, podcasts, videos, blogs, articles, are all on this website. I've got an awesome store coming up. I've got Rolling Thunder game calls, Woodhaven custom game calls, Bone Collector, Redfin polarized sunglasses, Wicked North Gear. Oh my God, there's so much stuff for the turkey hunter that's gonna be on this site. It's not it's not a huge site, not a huge store. But there's some really good stuff on there. The content, you're really gonna enjoy it. So check it out, turkeyseason.com. That sucker is going live on the first official day of turkey season in this country, March 4th, Southern Florida. So check that out if you're not turkey hunting. It's going to get you in the mood. Got some really, really cool stuff on there, and it's just going to continue to grow. So turkeyseason.com, you can find it on Instagram, The Turkey Season. Some dude's got turkey season locked up. So if you know that guy, send him a DM. Tell him to give it up. So thank you so much for listening to this program. I really appreciate it. The popularity of this show has exploded. I did not see this happening, and it's all because of you guys listening to this. So leave me a review. I saw some reviews on there already. Warmed my heart. Thank you so much. I appreciate you guys listening to this. Reach out to me, Paul Campbell 322 on Instagram, Paul Campbell on Go Wild. Love to talk with you. Man, turkey season's coming. Thanks, guys. Where at in Louisiana are you guys from?
Denham Springs, Louisiana. It's about, I guess, 10, 15 miles east of Baton Rouge. Okay. Due east of it.
I've been to New Orleans a couple times. I've poked around. I've been to Baton Rouge a couple of times. I've never done any turkey hunting down there. I need to get down there and experience that. So
Yeah, I'm sure we'll talk about that in a minute, but we used to have a lot of turkeys, but they've gone down just like it has all over the United States, you know, but they started to come back a little bit. So I got a good friend of ours that does a lot of research. He works for he's actually the turkey program manager for Louisiana. So we could talk about that too.
Yeah, I saw you guys put that out. Who got to hold the tom? Who was that?
That was Turkey.
That was me. Well, okay. 2 years ago. Yeah.
2 years ago. Okay. And that's really
the last one that came out was Cody. He's the manager of the program. That was the one that just came out, but I held one 2 years ago.
That's very cool.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's pretty neat. We're doing here in Ohio. We're doing a nesting and brood habitat study. It's a multi-state cooperation between the agencies and the National Wild Turkey Federation. And I work for the NWTF. So I don't know if you guys knew that or if we've talked about it. So it's cool. I get to travel all over the country and talk to people like you guys. And I get to, man, I wanted to hold a turkey so bad. Like, I can't tell you. I just want to like touch one and just hold it and be like, I love you. And then just let it go and let it fly. So I'm really looking forward to that, but they've got, the state is starting in Ohio State University. They're putting out bait sites. Our deer season runs until like, I don't know, the first week of February. It runs pretty long. So as soon as that's over with, they're going to start baiting public land sites. And then they're going to have the nets out there. And so we're taking some NWTF members out there, and we're going to sit in ground blinds and hopefully get to push the button and catch some turkeys. So
that's a cool experience for sure.
It is. And you know, with my role, like I want the members to get to experience it, but I'm going to be back there just like a kid, man. Just like, oh, come on, let me push the button once.
I was going to tell you, I went with Cody 2 years ago when he was doing it, and he had I think it was in February, and he had the bait set out, and they had the traps, and we got there real early, and I was going to do most of the fin. And the guys that were going to shoot the net were over to our side, and we were communicating with little radios. And Cody was listening, and he was watching them through binoculars, and I'm finning it. And he said, you got to wait. And I think there were like 22 turkeys out there, one large tom. That was the one that I held. And he said, you got to wait till all their heads go down, because if you shoot the net with their head up, he said, it clipped it off. And we caught all 22.
Oh, wow.
We caught 21 of them, and one jake got away from us. So we had turkeys everywhere.
But none of them injured, though.
None of them was injured.
Man, that's really neat. Talk about pressure. I mean, you don't want to decapitate a turkey. I mean, you're just probably looking at all of them like, okay, we good to go. And
I don't know how Cody did it, but he was watching, and he says, no, 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 no. And now, boom. None of them were injured. So it's amazing how they do that.
Yeah, man, it is pretty neat. I'm really looking forward to it. I hope I just get to experience that. Give me a rundown of all your names, the nicknames, how you got those. We'll start. Whoever wants to start.
Start on this end.
There we go.
Well, I'm Hindley. And as I always tell everybody, I kind of earned my name. It was actually given to me by Turkey Hunter's father, Little Turkey Hunter's grandfather, years ago.
When
I first got into turkey hunting. And it was actually during squirrel season. Well, we had a good squirrel hunt that morning. Cooked us a good gravy that night. And I happened to get up, and I went and fixed my plate. And we all know it's the best part of a squirrel to eat, just like a deer, anything else, is the hind leg. So I fixed my plate, and boy, I put a little rice on there, put a little gravy. And then next thing you know, I grabbed all the hind legs out of the pot. So Gobbler, who's no longer with us, he goes up there and fixes his plate. It says, there ain't a hind leg left in this pot. So therefore, I earned my name, the hind leg.
Everybody earns their name.
Popo got back over to the table. He's like, hell, there's all the hind legs right there. Look who's got them. And it stuck with him that night to this day. That's been over 20 years.
Been over 20 years.
Oh, wow. Now, Steve, what about you? What's your give us your nickname?
My real name's Stephen Howes, but I'm a little turkey hunter, and I just came with that name because he was turkey hunter, so everybody just started calling me Little Turkey Hunter, and that was it. It was simple.
Just as soon as you could walk, little turkey.
No big story on it, just born into it.
There you go.
I'm James Howes, and my father, his grandfather, was the gobbler. He's the one that kind of introduced us and who made all of our wing bones. And his name was the gobbler, and I'm, of course, turkey hunter. So that's kind of the pecking order that we have.
Very good.
And I'm Jason Harris. I'm cousins with these two right here. Not that one on the end, but just these two right here.
I'm the oddball.
Yeah.
There you go.
Perched as a when we hunted in the forest running dogs during deer season, we have handles, of course. You can use your real name on a CB radio. Of course, that's before cell phones. And my dad was the green trout, which is a bass. And we had to find something for me because I started mouthing off on the CB instead of using my name. So we tried to find a fish that was smaller than the green trout. And we couldn't think of a name of a little bass. So we just said, all right, what about a perch? A red-bellied perch. It ended up being perch. So
there you go. Good.
And we have one other member that's not with us tonight. And that's Jeffrey. And his handle is Bagman. But we have to let him explain how he received that name.
Yeah, fair enough. So one of the things that I really like on your videos and your intros, you talk about kind of the turkey hunting tradition that you guys have and how it started with your father, Gobbler. I mean, really, when he shot that first turkey, talk about that. What, I mean, 1933, that is impressive.
Yeah, 1933. I know if you, just from me reading history and a lot of the turkey hunt population back in those days, it was real low across the United States. But in Louisiana, they're known as the Florida parishes, which if you're just picturing it, it would be like the toe of the boot. And all that area was prime turkey habitat, and they had a lot of turkeys then in the 20s, you know. And my great-grandfather, he passed away before I was born, but Daddy knew him well. I think he passed away when he was about 16, so he remembers him very well. He taught my grandpa how to hunt, turkey hunt. They made the wing bone calls. All my grandpa's family, uncles, first cousins, there's a ton of them, and they all turkey hunted. Of course, some had made their box calls, and they were just trying to start making the diaphragm calls and all that. But the wing bone was my great-grandpa and my grandpa's go-to. And my great-grandpa made it for my grandfather probably around the late 20s, 1927, 28, made his first wing bone turkey call and started teaching Pawpaw how to hunt. And he told him, he said, son, you're going to learn more on your own than what I can do for you. So he turned him loose, and he was 9 years old in the spring of 1933. And he told me he could walk out the back door and hear anywhere from 9 to 10 turkeys gobble from the back porch of the house. It was that many turkeys. And he said he would go out there and he said, I'd call the one and he'd shut up and I'd run him off and I'd go to the next one and run him off. And he said, after I'd run them all off and they all shut up, he said, I'd go back, sit on the porch, and Daddy'd tell me, practice with me, you know? And he said, I kept going. And finally he went out there and finally killed one. So, and that was 1933.
Wow. Man, what a story. What a family tradition. So I don't know many people that have that deep, rich family tradition of turkey hunting that goes back that far that you've been able to talk about. Especially, I mean, my tradition, I didn't start hunting until I was 25. Mm-hmm. My dad didn't hunt. My grandfather, he did. He died when, you know, in the mid-70s. I wasn't born until 82. I've got his hunting license from, I want to say, like 1955, and I've got a couple shotguns, and that's it. That's where my heritage starts. And, you know, it's kind of, I get jealous when I hear about that stuff, and I love hearing about it. It's just neat. It's neat to hear those old stories. And I've got this book on my shelf back here. It's from 1966, and it's about hunting. It was from the hunting season of 1965. So it talks about like populations. It talks about license sales and all that thing from the different states. And it's funny how many states didn't even have a hunting season for spring turkeys during that time. And I don't think a lot of modern hunters, they don't even realize that we is like, you didn't even get to experience hunting turkeys in a lot of states. I know in Ohio, our first modern turkey season wasn't until 1966. We shot 12 turkeys that year. It was open in six counties, and they sold, you know, just a handful of licenses, 12 turkeys. And so people forget that. So the turkey, you know, just kind of that cradle being, you know, the southeastern portion of the United States. I mean, there was pretty decent population. So that's really neat that, you know, your family got to, you know, got to hunt when other states didn't have turkeys, right. You know, and that's really neat. And I mean, you talk about that's kind of the foundation, you know, your family, you know, is the foundation for the modern turkey hunter culture that we know just collectively, you know, and that's really cool, man. You talk about legacy. That's some neat stuff. So, you know, I hope you guys are proud of that. That's pretty cool.
We are very proud of it. And it's funny, you know, to hear my grandma's side of the story, you know, how she would said all our, the way we pick with each other, you know, and I called this one off for you, or you couldn't call that, all the stuff that the turkey hunters do today. She said all those conversations went on in the 40s and 50s when her papa first got married, and she said it all sounds the same.
Oh man, that's so funny.
That's it.
That's so funny, man. You just wish that like we had videos of those old school turkey hunters just sitting around, just running their mouths and just getting after each other and cutting it up. I mean, that'd be great, man. You talk about
flying away. We are fortunate though with I do have a lot of old pictures from black and white, you know, from probably going back at least to the early 40s of them with turkeys, you know, all the way up through. I got a bunch of daddies in his teens, 7, 8 years old to high school. You know, we got a lot of those pictures. So got those saved, got those in the safe.
Okay. Now, Turkey Hunter
built a very large Bass Pro Shop here probably 5, 6, 7 years ago. And at least that many
got some
years
of them
ago
in there.
And they came around to the community, and we got a bunch of pictures of my dad, my grandfather, his brothers, and they have a lot of them blown up and posted in the Bass Pro Shop here in the turkey section. And it's pretty neat to go down there and see them all. And that was one thing Dad was very proud of. He used to go down there before he passed away. He passed away in 2013, and he'd want to go look at his pictures. So he enjoyed that.
That's pretty cool.
When it first opened, you know, we couldn't wait to get up there. We didn't know where they were at or which ones they had chosen. And I mean, they had them blown up, you know, 4x4. And I bring him up there, and we're walking around. I said, look, there you are right there, you know. And he looked at it and had a guy standing there, and he bumped him. He said, that's me right there. That guy said, well, it don't look like you. He said, heck, you put 60 years on you and see if you don't change.
That's funny. That's good. That's good stuff. So, Turkey Hunter, when did you start turkey hunting? When did
old gobbler pull you out? Probably, of course, I squirrel hunted up first, and then they would never take me turkey hunting because, you know, one of the main things is, you know, you got to hide, you got to stay still. And I was, you know, kind of hyper around and so forth. But I probably really started in probably around 10, they would take me with them, and I'd miss one or two, but I finally killed my first one. I was with Daddy when I was 11 years old, and I remember like it was yesterday. But it was one of those things you cherish forever. And I was with him when he killed his first one, and him and called several off of him until I let Hind Leg kill one. So I'm as you can tell, I'm the senior member of the group. So
yeah,
he's got seniority.
I got seniority over all of them.
So, you get to pull the trigger first every season, right?
That's it. That's it. And,
good. Good deal. So, you know, is a father, you know, I get my kids into hunting, and I'm at the point where I want them to have the more chances than I do. You know, I want them to pull the trigger, and that's the stuff that, like, you know, when you close your eyes for the last time, man, those are the things that are going to flash to your mind. It's not going to be yours. You know, it's going to be your kids, and it's going to be, you know, the people that you bring into it. So those are always neat experiences. So now when you're getting in, this is funny, because my friends are just now starting to get into turkey hunting. I've gotten them into it over the years, but we're having those conversations like, okay, who's on the gun first, and how do you guys settle that argument every hunt or every season?
Well, we always let Hind Leg shoot, because there's a 50-50 chance he's gonna miss.
So one's gonna happen.
At least you can be the backup, so you still might have a chance to shoot. But now, since we started filming, you know, I pretty much I get behind whoever's gonna go. I try to split up and go with leg some, daddy some, and perch some, and film, you know. We do have a video coming out this year, so I think y'all gonna enjoy that one. It's the whole game, and it was a show.
That sounds fun. Yeah, yes, I can't wait to see. Yeah, I can't wait to
a
see
lot
that.
Of so. Action.
Yes,
a lot of
man.
Action,
I dude. Oh, that's gonna be good. So how many have you guys hunted all 49 states and have turkeys? Or are you still working on that?
Still working on it. I guess I'm around the 20s. I think everybody else is right there pretty close to me. I may have one or two up on them, but
yeah,
it's a goal of ours. I know when they, you know, this back in the 90s, it was the grand slam. And we went and did that. And then after it was over with, we were like, well, now what, you know? So, and then they started all with the 49. And I said, well, we want to do it, but we don't want to do it too quick. We want to enjoy it.
Yeah, there you go. Spread it out a little bit. That and the pocketbook might have something to say about that. I know I've been trying to talk my wife into letting me, you know, hunt more states than I have this year, and I'm pitching her on a Western swing. So I've got a Florida hunt planned. I live in Eastern Territory, and you know I've got a Montana hunt planned. And so I told her, I said, if I kill an Osceola, I kill an Eastern, and I'm fortunate enough to kill a Merriam's out in Montana. I have to
stuff on third.
Yeah. And what's crazy is if I kill all three of those, I mean, the pressure that I'll put on myself for Rio will
be tremendous. We all know the feeling.
Yeah. And so my wife's like, well, you have your entire life to do it. I'm like, you don't understand. Like, I can do it 1 year. It's not the point. I can do it 1 year. I'm going to do it. I'm just telling. I'm not asking. I'm telling you, like, that I'm just going to.
It's
going to
happen.
Yeah, I'm going to go to some state that has Rios, and I'm going to spend however much money it costs to get on public land, and I will. I was like, I will make it up to you on the backside of turkey season. I promise. But that's. I'm just giving you a fair warning that I just hope that happens.
Start laying the groundwork and the preparation now. Huh?
Oh, that's it. It's just. What do you need? What's up? What can I do for you? How's the house? Cleaning the house. Take care of the girls. I'm doing all of these things. You know, just lay it. So, what do you guys got planned coming up? You got any big hunts planned?
Yeah, I'll be going to Florida the first weekend. Of course, we'll all be in Mississippi when it opens on March 15th, and then. I think the whole crew's going to Kentucky this year.
Kentucky's a good one.
He went with us before. We went in
2014.
2014.
9 years ago.
Okay. Nice. Yeah. I Kentucky's probably my favorite state to hunt. I think really? That I've been in. Yeah. There's a lot of turkeys there. The terrain is cool. I like the hills. I like the open areas. It's just a lot of fun. I am doing my first Florida hunt. I've never done that. And I mean, it's January 31st and I'm going to be down there March 18th and I can't sleep already. Yeah. I've watched all your Osceola videos and I just go on YouTube and I type in Osceola turkey hunting. And I'm just like, just absorb all of the content I can. So I'm looking forward to that. So let's talk about the namesake, Team Wingbone. So when I first started turkey hunting, I'll tell you, I've told this story once or twice on this podcast, but I'll give it to you guys. So I was 25 when I started hunting. YouTube wasn't really around. This mid 2000s, early 2000s. And I bought the Primo's Power Crystal turkey call. And I didn't realize you had to scratch it up, right? To make it make noise like a turkey. Mm-hmm. And so for weeks, I was trying to make this thing sound like a hen. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't figure it out. And so I take it back to the store that I bought it from, this little hunting store in McConnellsville, Ohio. And I'm like, hey man, this turkey call is broken. I need a new one. And he just looks at it and doesn't see that it's, you know, that it's scratched up. And he like takes the sandpaper and he scratches it. And here's how you work it. Get out of here. I'm like, oh great. So I start with the pod call, and then I get into like mouth calls, and I realize that I have this terrible gag reflex that never goes away. And so I got into wingbone calls. I got into trumpets. I got into my personal favorite, tube calls. But I do love the wing bone. So you guys don't use anything other than a wing bone. I mean, that is it. And I love it. How'd that start?
My grandpa, made all the wing bones that we have, you know, and, that was his thing around the community to make wing bones. and he would give them to people. You know, they'd come by and they'd want to hear all the old time stories, and he'd tell them. And of course, they would ask, you know, can you make me a wing bone? And he would, and he never sold one. He always gave them all away, you know. So every time, as that group kept growing and growing, and you know, around town, they'd kill a turkey and they'd bring it, go to grandpa's house and show the turkey off, you know. So that got to, that's kind of how it started. That was probably back in the 90s to, you know, that, well, Team Wingbone got another one, you know. So that's kind of how the name got kicked off. Team Wingbone started calling really anybody that used one of Pawpaw's wingbones, that was Team Wingbone. So
I bet the first time he heard that, he was strutting around town like,
he still is.
And then, of course, when we started the YouTube and the filming, you know, it was no question what we were going to be called at that point.
But he'd always make us, because he was too old up in age to be able to go with us on a trip. And he'd always make a call for us, and we'd take one with us on a trip. And if we went, and we mostly hunted private land, public land. But if we'd see a turkey on private land, we'd go and ask permission or whatever. And if they'd grant us permission, if we killed the turkey, we'd always have one of his wing bones and we'd give it to him. And he's got wing bones all over the country that we've distributed through the years.
Man, that's neat. What a tradition. And so I think that's, you know, that wing bone, that's one of those traditional calls. It's the same thing as the trumpets, you know, the tube calls. It's just, it's really those calls that were, you know, on the forefront of turkey hunting and box calls. And if you've been to the Edgefield NWTF Museum, they have a box call that was like hand carved by someone back like the 1800s. Have you? That thing is, it is unbelievable. I'll send a picture of it to you. It's
yeah, I'd love to get it.
Yeah, it's Will Primos has it. He donated it to the museum to display, and it is just, I mean, you look at it and just think like some kid at a farm was just like, you know, I'm going to carve this box, you know, I'm gonna hunt turkey. It's so cool. And I like what you guys do is you've got such that strong, you know, hunting heritage. And it's really a preservation of kind of traditional turkey hunting. And, you know, you use the wing bone and the way that you guys hunt on your shows, I can see that it's that traditional, you know, calling, man, you're just using woodsman skills, you're using the calling skills, you're hiding in bushes. It's just, I like it. And so
that's the way we were taught. So
that's it. Right. And you see, a lot of,
say, you know, what you take pride on and growing up is 90%+ of where we hunt is public land. We grew up hunting here in the National Forest in Mississippi, and most of our trips are National Forest. Not that we hadn't gone on private pieces or actually went on Indian reservation, but when you go in public, it's a little bit different than, you know, sitting on a private piece and maybe you got 15 gobblers and maybe sitting in a ground blind. There's nothing wrong with that, but it just seems like we're so used to the public, and then you got to deal with other hunters. You don't know who's around the corner, who's on the other, you know, mountain or hill or whatever. So it makes it a little bit different that you're anybody can be around you from anywhere else. But it also, going back to the old school, you talk about old school, I remember hunting with a gobbler when I was 8 or 10 years old, and he would identify trees to sit behind or logs to sit behind or a ridge. And he would, the wind and the humidity and the way the turkey gobbled. I mean, there were so many details that was going through your mind that you wouldn't even think of. And that's what I call old school, really turkey hunting, to really get in there and figure out, all right, how am I going to beat this thing? Does he have one hen, no hens, or 15 hens with him? So all that's going through your mind, where you set up, don't set up, call, don't call, all those are racing through your mind, and it's got to be done pretty quickly.
Yeah, it does, and that's something that, you know, regrettably for me, I just, it, within the last like 7 or 8 years, as I'm walking through the woods, the entire time I'm just looking. I could sit there, and it's just walking, because you never know. And this show is really for people that are just learning to turkey hunt, just getting into it, or want to become better. You never know when one of those suckers are going to pop off. You have no idea. And if you're, and I've been there, we've all been there, where some, you know, a Tom just rips one off 60 yards from you, and you're looking around like, oh God, where do I sit? Where's a bush? I need to, you know, you just like lay flat on the ground, like, oh God, okay, calm down, reassess. So, yes, and
I guess one thing that's etched in my mind from being taught from a very early age is that The one thing that was drilled and drilled and drilled, make sure when you sit down, make sure you are hit. That was the number one rule. And he would, you know, get behind a stump or he would get behind a log. And the first thing to do, Lees would go on top of the log to conceal yourself or whatever. But I guess the number one item on the list is make sure you are hit. And, you know, for the beginning turkey hunter, that's a big, big, big deal.
And don't move.
And
now we got to set up the camera, set up the GoPro, set up the backup camera. All right, now let's hunt.
Yeah, I was watching just one of your videos recently, and you got the big tripod, and then I see you, like, you set the one GoPro in front of you, and you turn it, you set the other one behind you, and you turn it. I'm like, man, God love those guys. Like, that's so much work. And just, hey, I'm getting anxiety just watching it. Like, stop moving. Like, it's time. And you know, when you're watching and listening, you don't know how close these turkeys are when they're gobbling. I'm like, that thing's right there. Like, stop with the camera. It's like, it's going to be okay. No one's going to be mad if you don't get it on film. So just kill that thing. So that's important. Stay hit. It's such an overlooked thing with new turkey hunters, intermediate turkey hunters, and advanced turkey hunters. You just, I mean, that constantly, like, scanning the woods, like, what can I hide in? And when you're looking for that hide, you've got the hide. Are you looking for, like, you got Tom working in, are you looking for something, if you know, maybe 20 or 30 yards in front of you, just to kind of break up, you know, where you're at, so it's not as easy as for him to see?
Right. Yeah. Like Daddy said, you know, you want to be hid. So we trying to get somewhere where you either going to be covered, you know, behind you, or we really like to get something in front of us, honestly, like a log or a stump or something like that. That's become more difficult with the camera. So I like when we setting up, when, you know, when the turkey gobbles and we setting up, I like to get as close to the shooter as I can, because I like to get that back and forth conversation, you know. And I get a kick out of that, because half the time we're so far off on what's happening, you know, after you know the outcome, you know, it's like, man, if we'd only knew that, you know. So, but yeah, just trying. I've gotten a little it's a leafy suit top is all it is. And I got that to go over the camera. So that helps conceal me, because usually I'll get them sitting up against something, whether it's a log or a tree, you know, and then I can slide in there right up, tuck in behind them. But I had to have that leafy suit on there to conceal me, and I was learning the hard way.
Yeah, many times.
A few times.
Yeah. I talked about this in an episode that we just recorded. That's the best, really the best and the only way to learn in turkey hunting is failure, right? I mean, that's – absolutely. Yeah, you do something and the turkey runs off and you stand up and you're like, well, I'm not going to do that again. But you are, because it's just what we do. It's a hard lesson to learn. So, Perch, like, when you're walking through the woods and you're listening to, you know, as a kid, to gobbler and to turkey hunter talk about, like, these lessons. I mean, when you're younger, did you like latch onto that, or was it just kind of like, yeah, I know. Like a lot of kids.
Yeah, not immediately. You know, at 10 years old, I knew everything about turkey.
Yeah.
I didn't have to listen to anybody. But he would point out, and my dad would remember this as well, who's not here, but he would say, he would look and see where the turkey was gobbling, especially if he's on a limb. And you got to kind of survey the woods, and it helps if you know the woods. If you don't, it's a little bit hard with the draws. So the turkey down here only hardly jump a draw, well, it's 2 foot wide. It don't have to have water in it. They're not going to cross that draw. And he would say, that turkey's going to come on that ridge right there, so you better get in shooting distance. I mean, that turkey may be 100 yards gobbling, and he knows. So when you're going through there and you're kind of surveying the landscape, to think about all these things and knowing the woods is a lot better, of course, where the cutover is, where he's, you know, where it's clear where he's going to walk. But after a couple of years, going through my high school years and learning more about where to set up, but also it's not just being still. It's also what I learned is you got to attack too. And that sounds kind of funny, turkey hunting. Why do you got to attack? Well, if you're calling the bird back and forth for 20 minutes and he's not moving and you're not moving, you have to make a move on him. But more than likely, he's hung up with hens or he's got something. They may come in later, but you either got to circle around, you got to crawl, or you got to make a move on him. We did that a couple of years ago. He and I did, got hung up. And sometimes you've got to get up and make a move, and it's harder now because you got two or three cameras within you packing all the equipment. But I've had a many times where I went back and forth for 30 minutes and they get silent. And you don't know if they're 20 steps or a half a mile, and you just lost out. So I've learned, I guess, to be a little more aggressive, especially just 8:30 in the morning, and you're still playing with him a little bit, patience starts wearing off. You got to start making some moves and see if you can move on him. So learning through the mistakes, and I probably missed 60-70% of them, but every time you go, you seem like you learn something. I learned something different, whether to move or not to move, and that's a split second you got to make, whether to get on him or not.
Yeah. So what when you've got that turkey that gobbling hard on the limb, and this is I mean, for people listening, this is going to happen all the time. Turkey gobbling hard on the limb, hits the ground, might respond to your calls, gobbling hard, and then just walks away. And you're just like, well, I don't know what happened. It could be hens. It could be who knows. That's the great life's great mystery. Why'd he stop gobbling? I don't know. So when do you pull that trigger to say, okay, I'm moving, I need to move? And what are the things that you're looking for in the woods that dictate your movements?
Using the terrain, depending on where he was gobbling at, but I'm very reluctant to move unless I know where he's at. So I either got to try to make him gobble or he gobble on his own. So I know exactly where he's at before I make my move, and just trying to use the terrain. One of the mistakes we probably make the most is going straight to him, but you're better off sometimes if you circle around one side or the other. Like Perk said, if you know the woods, that's going to help you tremendously. But most of the time we're somewhere new. So we're just trying to use the ONX maps, you know, and looking at the terrain, topography, and just try to reposition. Because if he didn't come to you, obviously you're not where he wanted to go. So, and yeah. Sometimes the world champion turkey callers can't call him to him if he don't want to go that way, you know. So you got to make a move on him.
Now, will you rip off like a locator call, owl call, or a crow or something before you move, just to see if you can just yank something out of them one last time?
It depends. I mean, because sometimes if they're answering you, you know, calling, I'd just go ahead and call to him one more time and get him to gobble. I feel like he hadn't come yet. He's not going to come. I'm just going to make him gobble, you know. So, if we get back away from them, you know, we would owl or blow the crow call then. On the Easterns, on the Merriams, they love the coyote call.
Yeah. So what are some of the terrain features that you think that, you know, and we could talk about terrain features and turkey movements literally for an hour, but what are some of the big things that you see or terrain features that, like, when you're looking at your map, you're like, okay, this is going to dictate where that turkey goes.
Yeah, usually, you know, the higher terrain, top of the hills is where I feel like
gobbling spots.
Yeah,
where they gonna go do their thing?
Yeah, so. We just try to move there, and I try to look at it and figure out how I can move where I can't be seen, because you don't want to be up on a ridge top moving, you know. So if I know he's going on a certain hill, I'll try to slide down on the backside of the hill I'm on, or get in the bottom. Make the move and then try to get on the ridge with him is what our deal is most of the time. Dragging all the cameras and all that along too.
Yeah. One of the real popular statements that you hear when you're consuming wild turkey hunting content and tips and tricks is taking his temperature. That's one of the, you know, one of the phrases that you hear all the time. So what does that phrase mean to you, and what are you looking for during that process?
Give it to them, Lee.
Well,
come on.
I mean, like I've always said, you're a hero one day and you're a zero the next. So you got to sit there, see what his mood is, and then see if he's really excited. See if you can get him excited. Sometimes you just got to take it easy and make him want to come see what's over on the other side of that ridge. So I haven't been doing it quite as long as him, been doing it since 1999, but I've been in a bunch of situations and done very well on some, and then I've throwed my hat and scratched my head on some others. So
yeah. You know. I'll tell you what, let's unpack this. This is a situation, and the great thing about having a show like this is I can ask selfish questions, right? Because that's why I do it. I want to know. So this is a scenario. Yeah, this is a scenario that left me, like, I just stood up and I'm like, what the hell just happened? Like, I have no idea what just happened. I'm public land. I'm the same as you guys. I hunt 98% public land. And the idea of sitting in a ground blind over a decoy, I that sounds awful. I mean, I hate to deer hunt for that very reason. I don't like to sit in the same spot. Like if your turkey's gobbling over the, I want to go. And so I was 3 or 4 miles into the woods, river bottom, and I'm just walking slow. I'm out hooting, calling every once in a while, and I hear a turkey just out of nowhere just gobbles. I'm like, okay. And he's across the creek, and I can see him. He's just walking back and forth. And I bet this turkey in a 45-minute period, this is no exaggeration, I bet this turkey gobbled 200 times. It was – I've got video of it just from my cell phone. I mean, it was funny. I just, at one point, I just stood up so I could get video of this turkey. I'll send it to you, Steve. And I'm like, this is the dumbest turkey. Yeah. And he just hammered and hammered. I didn't even call. I did a couple of times. Like he'd take a breath and I just, you know, throw out a yelp. Like, hey, come on. You know, never. He just gobbled and then just walked off. That was it. And I stood there. I'm like, this is the most frustrating turkey I've ever met. Like this thing would not stop gobbling. And he didn't care that I was over there. And to me, that's like the hardest turkey to hunt. The one that won't shut up because he doesn't care. Right. I mean, he's just, I think he just figured out how to gobble is what it is.
He was proud. Huh?
Yeah. How do you figure out a turkey like that? And I know, you know, we're all looking for the turkey that's ready to die. That's what we're looking for.
Right.
But how do you handle,
I think in that situation like that, a lot of times you don't realize there were probably some other turkeys over there. He knew it. You didn't. And he was like, he trying to get you to come on, you know, or that was his, happened to be his routine, his route. He wanted to go that way. And the way it's supposed to work, the gobbler's supposed to gobble and the hens are supposed to come to him, you know? So, but I mean, in those situations, I was in one exactly like that in Mississippi, probably 4 or 5 years ago. And I mean, I watched him till I was sick of watching him on the ridge and he was not going to come. So I just slid back off the ridge. I had thankful for Onyx. You couldn't have done it. It would have been harder, not impossible, but to have the confidence of I knew exactly where he was at and circled around and got on the other side, made one call and he ran over me. So
Gotta love it.
Just making that move and getting to where he wanted to go.
Yeah. And that's the fun stuff. That's the battle back and forth that you get with and you know, old school hunting, traditional hunting, whatever it is. You're not out there shaking decoys and with the reaping fan and all that stuff. Like that's the fun stuff, you know, like you go to battle with that turkey. So let's talk about calling in the sense of like how you go about that. You know, in the morning, are you guys calling a lot? What's kind of your method? When do you start calling?
Well, that goes back to the gobbler.
As soon as you get out of the truck.
Well, he thought he patented the same, but he didn't patent one call. That's all. And the point was when you call and he answers, shut up, basically. And, you know, you hear a lot about this, especially these days, and what you read and see some of the videos. It's like the turkey and the caller is having a conversation, which is not supposed to be like that, at least in my opinion. Call, gobble, call, gobble, call, gobble. Eventually, that's going to wear out. He's a lot smarter, at least, than I am. So the less calling, the better. But there are certain times you really need to call, especially when he hits the ground. If you see him pitch down or hear him, you better call immediately when he hits ground. But he may be looking for you, may not, but he may be trying to locate you. But if he's on the limb going back and forth, once you call, he knows where you're at. You know, you don't have to keep calling 15, 20, 30 times back and forth. Now, 5, 10 minutes go by and he doesn't gobble, you know, you have to go a little back and forth. But that overcalling is what I learned. And sometimes I probably don't call enough, I admit. But they're not stupid. They're not, you know, he's not a 4-year-old turkey for a reason.
When we get to one in the tree, Pawpaw never did like to call to one. When, you know, if you got to him, he's in a tree roosted and you get up there close enough and sit down, get hit, and he's gobbling. He wanted to let him fly down. And I do that a lot, but sometimes I get impatient and I got to pull the bone out and call to him. And of course, he gobbles, you know. Sometimes it works out and sometimes it don't.
You got to call to it.
When it don't, I'm like, God, I know. That's
well, yeah. And you had to know the gobbler, but the older he got, the more he wanted you to call.
Oh, he
got
call to it.
He'll
tell
you.
Yeah, call to it.
Call to him again.
We laughed. He busted us for calling, but you call.
Yeah. You're like, hey, one call, that's all. You
know, we definitely do decrease our calling substantially.
Yeah.
So, I mean, by the, you know, May 1st or end of April, these turkeys on this public land, they done seen it all. They done seen it and heard it all. So, yeah. We definitely slow down on our calling.
Sure. I'll tell you a story real quick, too, about a lot of people, there's difference in opinions of whether they get call shy or not, you know. I guess about 2 years ago, they had two gobblers, and me and Daddy hunted them the first morning, and he shot one of them and missed it. And we went back about a week later, and there they are, both of them, gobbling, and called them back up and shot them and missed them again. And we're using the wing bone, you know, so I'm like, dang, what's the matter, you know, and we're trying to – you learn from your mistakes, you know, so I get it all straight. He didn't get to go that one morning, and I went, called him up again, and I killed one of them, both of them, same spot, knew it with him, you know. And so I got one. We looked at him. He said, finally got one of them. So about 3 weeks later, it was getting towards the end of the season, and I'd seen his track in the road, and I knew he was using that road in the same area. And I went in there one evening, and I sat down in the curve of the road, and I could see way down the straightaway, long ways down the old woods road. I was sitting there, and I'm looking around, and I looked down that road, and there he stood, about 70 yards. I said, dang, hey, boy, there he is. I pulled that wing bone out, and when I yelped, when he went around the curve of the road down there past me, he looked like Roadrunner kicking up dust. He left there. He done heard all of that wing bone. He wanted to hear it. So that's the only way if you want to form an opinion if they get call shy or not. That was my experience.
Oh man, that's funny. That's a good story. Yeah, it that speaks volumes, right? Oh man, that's I maybe lose my train of thought. That was a great story. So let's have a little fun here. Who's the best shot in the group?
Oh, I thought you said worst.
That was the worst.
These are the
I can't hear.
These are the two worst. We were in Kansas 1 year with this one, going for the Grand Slam in 1 year. I guess June 1st or whatever.
Memorial Day weekend,
95 degrees. He needed the Rio for the single slam. He talked in Stephen to go with him. We go up to Kansas. We're sweating, and Stephen's calling, and well, a turkey answers, and here he comes, and he walks up there, and he shoots, and the turkey flies off, and he drops his head, and he said, "I hurt that turkey." Well, immediately, you know, we drop the red challenge flag, and we pull it up on the camera, and we review the video, and the only thing that hit the turkey was the dirt when he shot in it because he's not a good – and this one shoots.
Oh, God.
So I guess it's between he and I.
Okay. Now, Heinlein, did you get the single season? Did you get a Rio?
I did. And then, okay. Like I said, the pressure's coming to you, so I'm just letting you know. Whatever. So I said, we were sitting there, and I I finished the slam with Osceola. I killed an Eastern at the camp. We had our Marion's trip planned. We went and killed, I can't remember if it was South Dakota, New Mexico. And I'm sitting there, and these two pumping on me. Leg, you can't finish the season on third. It was in Oklahoma. So I'm in the back of the truck on the way back from Oklahoma, Googling. I got to find Rio. So I found an old boy in Kansas, and I called him. I said, man, I need one Rio. That's all I need. I did. I shot in the dirt on that one and then blew my gun to pieces. Remember, it wouldn't shoot no more. I was the only one with a gun. I had a single shot at this time. So me and him, we go around the corner, and I did. I wound up getting a slam in one season. So yeah.
He was
a good person. Deal. Yeah. Now, who missed a couple of times and went out and bought a new shotgun in that's one of the videos? That's
He's only bought his fourth or fifth gun.
Until
he realized it wasn't a gun.
I had my Benelli, my super black eagle, was apartment, and he was hollering for me to come pick you up. And I shoot a turkey, and the gun pretty much fell apart on me. It was super black eagle, too. And had it in four pieces, and I got video of it. I got pictures of it. And it was a turkey standing out there 40 steps laughing at me. I got running about five pieces. I took it apart, laying in the pine straw, and I took a picture of it, and nobody believed it. And that was the end of that super black eagle. So I bought a Beretta, and it didn't do much better.
Oh, man.
Operator error, I think it is.
But you, it ain't the error. We're not taking shots too far. It just, the nerves gets to us no matter how long we're doing it. You know, nerves gets the best of us.
All I do as it should. On a serious note, when I was growing up, of course, I hunted with a, I guess, earlier with 410 than a 20 gauge, and there was none of the super, you know, a TSS and all this. I remember my dad would not let me shoot a turkey or try a turkey over 35 steps. I mean, that was 40 was way pushing it. Well, now, and we do miss some, you're talking, you know, 50, 60 steps, especially in the woods, not in a ground blind shooting out at a feeder or something with limbs and everything. So I remember, so now you get older and you got more gun loads and TSS and sights and this and that, 3.5-inch shells, which I shot 2 3/4, you know, my whole life. So yeah, now you get a little more confident going to 50, 60, 70, and you will have more misses shooting out that far, you know, if you can't get them in, but preferably 40 steps and in is, you know.
Do you think that some of the technology that's popped up into turkey hunting, and I feel like it's been deer hunting, it's been developing for years with cell cams but with turkey hunting, you got TSS. I mean, do you think some of that advanced technology degrades the hunting experience?
I think if you're responsible with it, you know, I mean, you could probably shoot one at 70 or 80 yards, but you don't, you know, 50 is what is our limit. But sometimes you misjudge that, you know. I know they got the range finders and all. That's been the joke between us. They shoot and then they pull the range finder out. You're supposed to do that
before you shoot the turkey. We always got confused. We didn't know if you range before or after the shot.
I've seen some of that. You know, someone missed and you're like, yep, 46 yards. And you're like, you should have done that before you shot. Like, hind leg, I think that was you that shot at the 46 and missed. I can't.
Yeah, I don't edit none of that stuff out. That's the way it happens. So I just let it roll with it.
I think just to kind of put a bow on that, I mean, if it's legal, it's ethical, and your experience and you practice, you know, if you trust your equipment, you know, and you're capable of shooting that far, I think that people can do that. And that's the one thing I tell people, you just practice. If you're shooting in your backyard at paper and you're not hitting it at 70, don't shoot at 70 in the woods. Right. Like you're doing a disservice to the animal at that point, because you're going to hurt them, and it's just disappointing yourself, you know? So you gotta be confident. There's a lot of things to go into something like that. So let's see. So we've established. There's turkey hunting. It feels like going through just kind of there's a mentality shift. I think the one thing with turkey hunters, and I think you guys will agree with this, you know, if there's 10 million licenses sold a year, I've said this, you know, 9 million of those are people that, you know, they're deer hunters, they're duck hunters, they like to turkey hunt just because it's something to do. And then 1 million of them are just passionate, rabid, just hardcore turkey hunters. And that 1 million people there, we're really protective of the pursuit. We're protective of the animal. So I think when you get some of these, you know,
yeah, and people go, I listen to a lot of podcasts and read a lot of stuff. And that's what one thing that I've seen, you know, that the reaping, I mean, it's a proven tactic. It's deadly, you know. But deadly, I'd just encourage anybody to read. It was Outdoor Life. It was an article written by Cameron Whittington, something like that, I think. But you can Google it, Outdoor Life, Turkey Reaping, and it'll come up. And he not only talks about the safety aspect of it, but he also gets into the just the way it triggers the turkeys and the turkeys that you're killing, you know, the dominant, the boss gobbler, the one that's going to breed all the hens, and how it affects them through the rest of the season if you kill him. And all the other hens have to go look, you know. So I'd encourage turkey hunters to go read that with an open mind and then maybe form an opinion on it. Because you say, it's up to the turkey hunters to protect this resource. You know, we can't rely on the state government and the federal government to make these rules. We got to be responsible ourselves when it comes to that.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's one thing that really separates the different hunting pursuits, turkey hunting, deer hunting, duck hunting, as turkey hunters. I mean, just your dad, you guys, turkey hunter, you didn't have turkeys in their native ranges in recent memories. You know, I mean, turkeys were established in all 49 states in just in 1999. I mean, that's not that long ago.
Right.
So I think collectively we know what it's like to not have something and quite frankly, to lose something. And so I think that creates the passion, that creates the protective nature of the hardcore turkey hunters. And you know, the more of those hardcore passionate turkey hunters there are, I think the better. And you know, with reaping for me, it's a safety issue.
Especially on public land. You know, it's like you hunt and we hunt. I'm not going out there reaping something in the Daniel Boone National Forest or, you know, somewhere in the Lincoln National Forest and hold a gobbler tail fan. I'm not going to do it for the safety reason.
Yeah, there is.
We're going to have a video coming out in a few weeks. There was a guy, we were on some public land. I had another guy with me. We called him Boo. And we were hunting. We had some turkeys out in the field. We were probably about 70 yards on the forest. The turkeys were out in a private field. And I heard Boo tell me something about left, to the left, you know. And I'm cutting my eyes and I look over there and there's a turkey in full strut. And I almost said shoot him. And thankfully Boo is a very experienced turkey hunter too. And he had realized it about the time I realized it. And it was a guy behind a full mounted, full strut decoy within 30 steps of us. And he didn't even know we were there. He was going to the turkeys, you know, so inexperienced turkey hunters. I mean, he fooled me for just a couple of seconds, which scared me, you know.
And that could be the end of that guy. And I, you know, there's a kid in 2021. He was 19 years old. Him and his girlfriend were on private property in West Virginia. And there was a 75-year-old gentleman who was trespassing and illegally hunting with a rifle, a high-powered rifle, shot this kid in the middle of his field because he was reaping. And so I think the dangers, the risk of it, even on public property, you never know who's out there. And that's the moral of this conversation. You know, that talk right there, you don't know who's out there. And thank God that you didn't see it, that you took that split second, those years of experience said, it doesn't look right. I mean, you could have saved someone's life, you know, and that's scary. That is scary to think of. That's what it comes down to. I mean, I'm not going to dress up like a buck during gun season in Ohio to bring in other deer. I'm not going to do that. You know, why do it during? So gentlemen, I've really enjoyed this talk, man. I love the content that you guys are putting out on YouTube. It's good. It's pure turkey hunting. I love it. And the sky's the limit with Team Wean Bone. You guys are just unbelievable guys. Thanks for your time tonight. Where can people find you guys on social media?
We're on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. And our handle's at Team Wingbone on all of those.
Good deal. You guys got a website?
We do. We just got it created. Just got a few hats for sale and some decals. So those are available. That's on Shopify. I think it's Team-Wingbone at Shopify is that website.
I love the logo, so I'm gonna have to get a hat. So good stuff. So well, gentlemen,
we appreciate you having us.
Thank
you, man. Enjoyed
it. Oh man,
good luck.
My pleasure.
Don't get stuck on third though, son. Look, when you get to third base, go ahead and start planting the seed with the wife now. Say
I'm trying. I'll tell you what. I'm gonna shoot
open to the end of May.
Okay, that's good to know. If I shoot a Merriam's, I mean, I'm not even going to celebrate that. As soon as it happens, I'm going to panic. Like, oh God, I've done it. Like, what do I do now?
The
pressure will just crush my chest. And I'm going to be like, oh God, I have to do this now. So no, it's all good. So gentlemen, good luck this spring. Good luck.
And
the rest of your hunting seasons. I really appreciate you guys and your time.
You
tonight.
Too. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you
for having me. Thanks, Paul.
My pleasure.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle.
because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your crave.